This is Back to You Box Office, episode number 271, for the weekend of September 16th through September 18th. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to Backseat Box Office. Let me introduce you to my co-host, Art. Art, how's it going?
It is going good. Same old, same old.
Yeah, you know, it's been kind of a mediocre September.
Yeah.
At least judging by what's going in the box office or movies for this month. So, I guess let's start the show off by talking about what happened in the box office last weekend. So, for the weekend of September 9th through September 11th, here's your top five. At number one, we have Sully, a new release with $35 million even. At number two, another new release, When the Bow Breaks, at $14.2 million. At number three, we have Don't Breathe in its third week of release at $8.3 million. At number four, in its sixth week of release, Suicide Squad, $5.7 million. And at number five, another new release, The Wildlife, at $3.3 million. And there's your top five. Something, number two movie on 2,200 screens.
Yeah.
Wow. And a $10 million budget. So it's already,
right.
It's already in the black, well, not in the black bag, but it's,
right.
It's getting there.
It's made its budget.
And yeah. You,
between the fact that it's in week one and the fact that it'll make more money when it finally hits DVD release, and that's not a bad deal. That's like when you're talking about horror movies, the last show we had, and how it's just a good return on investment. It's cheap to make, and people go see them.
True. True. Okay, so that's our little look at the box office for that last weekend. So let's get on over to what's coming out this weekend. So, Art, why don't you tell us about the first of three movies that are coming out this weekend?
All right. Top of our list, Bridget Jones's Baby. 84% fresh on the tomato meter. 44 reviews counted, 37 fresh, 7 rotten. 90% wanted to see it out of 7,600 people. So that's not a lot, but it's enough that they're giving it a fresh rating. Bridget Jones returns for this third entry in the romantic comedy series that once again features Renee Zellweger, Colin Firth, and Hugh Grant. Author Helen Fielding co-wrote the script with David Nichols, handling directing duties. Jeremy Wheeler, rated R for language, sex references, and some nudity. Genre comedy romance, directed by Sharon Maguire. That's weird because it just said that David Nichols is handling directing duties. So who's, are they co-directing? I don't know. Who knows? Written by Emma Thompson, Dan Mazur, and Helen Fielding. Runtime 122 minutes. And like you said, we have, who else do we have? Jim Broadbent, Patrick Dempsey, Emma Thompson. I don't know any of those names. They look like... probably English actors, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I'm interested. I've got to see. I don't know if Brittany has seen these, the first two movies. I saw them as part of my previous relationship. So whether or not she would be interested in seeing them, I don't know. She probably doesn't care at all. And if that's the case, then I will be seeing this when it comes out on cable.
It'll be interesting to look at the third movie of a comedy. You follow me? You know, kind of like, you know, The Hangover Part 3 was bad.
Right.
But 84% for the third in a series.
Yeah.
For a comedy. That's, I don't think that, you know, that's not nothing, I don't think.
Yeah. No, we live in a different age, but there was a time when you had comedy serials, you know, like the Dagwood movies and the, what was the one that had the, I don't know, just back in, you know, the 40s and 50s and 60s, you had comedy series.
Are you 90? What are you?
I like old movies.
Where are you getting this from?
I like old movies. Come on. Come on. You didn't watch Dagwood. Really? When you were, you know, like 10, 11, 12, and it's a Sunday and it's raining out and we had three freaking channels.
True. On the black and white, is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, they were black and white movies running during the day with there was nothing else to do.
Okay, so I just went to Box Office Mojo.
Okay.
Which kind of went against my whole argument because I'm kind of looking at this from the Rotten Tomatoes angle, but but it might prove my point a little bit. So all I did was search for three.
Okay.
But it's not giving me lifetime gross. It's not. It depends on which one. Because I guess some of these are not out yet. So Nativity 3: Dude, Where's My Donkey?
Okay.
Some of these aren't out yet. Kung Fu Panda 3.
Yeah.
We count that as a comedy.
It is, but it's a cartoon. So animated, I put it in a different category. Just like you could say Shrek had multiple movies and it's a comedy, but it's animated. Keep looking.
Yeah, I'm just three geezers. $4,000 it made. Men in Black 3.
Once again, more action than comedy. Because you could also put Lethal Weapon on that list.
Yeah.
Those are comedies, but there wasn't
a whole lot of comedies. Let's go further down.
No.
Three Idiots, $6 million. Rush Hour 3.
Action comedy.
The Santa Claus 3, The Escape Clause.
I would count that. That is not an action movie, but it is also more geared towards a younger audience. This is interesting. This is some homework for next week. I'm going to come up with a bunch of stuff that's really old and F you.
That's okay. Just no silent films, okay?
I would rather go outside in the rain than watch a silent film.
No, okay.
At least when I was a young child.
The Toxic Avenger Part 3, The Last Temptation of Toxie.
That's
$363,000.
It's funny that comes up because we were just talking about how Toxic Avenger is getting a remake. Yeah. Trauma. Gotta love them.
All right. So let's move on. And yes. So I will be telling you about the next movie. This is going to be Blair Witch. 56% on the tomato meter. Out of 43 reviews, 24 fresh and 19 rotten. And out of the 5,933 Rotten Tomatoes users, 91% felt like they had to let us know that they want to see it. So here's your description, if you weren't aware. A group of college students venture into the Black Hills Forest in Maryland to uncover the mystery surrounding the disappearance of James's sister, who many believe is connected to the legend of the Blair Witch. At first, the group is hopeful, especially when a pair of locals offer to act as guides through the dark and winding woods. But as the endless night wears on, the group is visited by a menacing presence. Slowly, they begin to realize the legend is all too real and more sinister than they could have imagined. Your rating is R for language terror, not horror, but terror, and some disturbing images. Your genre is horror, directed by Adam Wingard, written by Simon Barrett, and this will quicken your pulse for 89 minutes. Starring, they didn't mention any of that, Brandon Scott, Wes Robinson, Valerie Curry, James Allen McCune, Callie Hernandez, and Corbin Reed. People that you will probably run into and have no idea who they are.
Yeah. I like how Valerie spells her name like calorie.
Yes. Yes. Well, they have to differentiate themselves, I guess.
Right. I don't watch horror movies. I'm definitely not going to. I didn't see the original Blair Witch. I won't see this.
Same here.
Yeah.
Same here.
But people will go see it.
True that is. Okay. Art, tell us about the third one.
Okay, our third and final movie, just making the cut, coming in at 2,400 theaters. But we threw it on anyway because it's sort of interesting. Snowden. Snowden is 54% rotten on the tomato meter. 39 reviews counted, 21 fresh, 18 rotten. 96% want to see it out of our largest number tonight, 12,370 people. Academy Award winning director Oliver Stone, who brought Platoon, Born on the 4th of July, Wall Street, and JFK to the big screen, tackles the most important and fascinating true story of the 21st century. Snowden, the politically charged, pulse-pounding thriller starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Shailene Woodley, reveals the incredible untold personal story of Edward Snowden, the polarizing figure who exposed shocking illegal surveillance activities by the NSA and became one of the most wanted men in the world. He is considered a hero by some and a traitor by others. No matter which you believe, the epic story of what he did, who he left behind, and how he pulled it off makes one of the most compelling films of the year. Rated R for language and some sexuality nudity, genre drama, directed by Oliver Stone, written by Oliver Stone and Kieran Fitzgerald. Runtime 138 minutes. Also has Tom Wilkinson, Nicolas Cage, Timothy Oliphant, Julie Richardson, Zachary Quinto, Scott Eastwood, and those are all the names that call attention to me. Anybody else you recognize?
No, not really. I was scanning the reviews.
Ah, anything good? Anything?
No, not really.
Nothing cutting enough.
Yeah. It's Michael Heaton from The Cleveland Plain Dealer. Paranoia has never been so entertaining as it is here. Strangely enough, that's a fresh review.
Okay, well.
And Peter Canavisi from Groucho Reviews. Born on the 4th of July for millennials. Stone effectively streamlined Snowden's story for mass consumption, edification, and identification. So, yeah, this would probably be a rental.
Not even that for me. I don't have any interest.
Yeah, I'm not a big Oliver Stone fan, but your mileage may vary.
Yes,
all right. Absolutely. All right, so that is our look at the three new movies coming out this weekend in the theater. So now let's move on over to share time. And so, Art, what have you been doing for the last 2 weeks?
Okay, last 2 weeks. Yeah, we did I feel like I had watched something, and I was ready to talk about it when we didn't do a show last week, and now I completely forgot what that was. So, I don't know. It's been a busy couple of weeks, just life and whatnot going on. The latest thing I've been digging into is Aubrey has been looking for something new and different to watch. Hi, what can I do for you?
Nothing. I'll go
push
my
blanket. Okay. Love you. Okay. So, Cartoon Network. Cartoon Network has an app where you can access, you know, all of its shows. And so we have been watching a lot more Cartoon Network, and I've found some interesting shows. There is a show called The Mighty Magiswords. And Magiswords is a portmanteau of magical sword. And it is a very off-the-wall, offbeat kind of comedy that is really kind of funny and entertaining. It's this brother and sister couple who they collect magical swords. And the magical swords just allow them to do any number of things. They might as well be Pokemon for as numerous as they are and for as many as they collect. And they work at a place that I think it's called like Heroes for Hire or Warriors for Hire, and people hire them to do jobs. So it's basically like D&D with a lot more comedy and a very, very high focus on the magical swords. And it's pretty entertaining and pretty funny all around. The other thing I've been watching a lot of on Cartoon Network is a lot more Teen Titans Go. Mm-hmm. I initially was not a fan of Teen Titans Go when it replaced the original Teen Titans cartoon, which was a little more playing towards a slightly older audience. I felt like Teen Titans Go really kind of dumbed it down a lot. And I've been watching a lot more of it, and there is a good depth of humor there. They changed the art style, and it's definitely something simpler. And I don't know if that was just to, like, maybe they were in trouble of losing the show and they needed to cut their budget down, or I don't even know if it's the same people who, I would imagine it's DC, so I would think it was coming out of the same production house. But it is a completely different style than everything else that they did. But I've been really enjoying it, going back, and like I said, I turned my nose up at it because of its change from the original Teen Titans cartoon show. I have been listening to a lot of a very long podcast. Dan Carlin's Hardcore History is these shows. They're like 4 hours long, so I literally get through two or three a day because I listen to them at speed and a half. Wow. But they had a 6-part series on World War I, and it was just incredibly, amazingly fascinating. Everything that went on and was involved in the First World War. I know that, like, in my schooling, World War I got zero coverage. You know, it was all about World War II, you know, or the Revolutionary War, the Civil War. But World War I didn't get covered at all. It was just kind of, yeah, World War I happened, you know, kind of between the Civil War and World War II is basically the amount of information I could have told you about World War I. And that involved Germany, you know, mm-hmm. and that was it. And now it's like it's really fascinating. And this hardcore history is totally worth listening to. I've started the next series in line, which is King of Kings. It's talking about the Assyrians and the Persians and just everything going on in that area that we now call the Middle East. And it's really good, and I'm really enjoying it, and it's stopping me from listening to all my other shows. So I get caught up on Backseat Producers because I've been so consumed with this show. So yeah, I think that's about it. I'm sure I'll remember something that I completely forgot. But as for right now, that's what I got. How about yourself, sir?
All right, so I too, I think I'm forgetting something, but I'm just going to talk about, I got a DVD from the library, Spectre, the latest James Bond film that came out, I think it was last year.
Yes.
I was probably the underwhelmed as much as I was with Skyfall. Just, I thought that they could have done more, maybe, I don't know. Probably has one of my favorite opening sequences because they're in Mexico City for Day of the Dead.
Okay.
And then having a chase scene, you know, juxtaposed against that was visually it was very cool. It was very cool. But you know, I don't know if I like the origin storyline that they're going with. I don't know. I don't know. It's probably because I still am still getting over not liking Skyfall. Maybe I already made up my mind for Daniel Craig was Daniel Craig. I will say that it was a good fight scene because for his big fight scene or the tough fight scene, they brought in Dave Bautista, you know, Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy. And you know, I was excited for the actor they brought in to play Blofeld, and I'm blanking on his name right now, but I didn't think he was in it as much as he should. I did like who they cast as the his love interest. I don't know why there needed to be two. Not that I am going to complain about Monica Bellucci at all, but I don't know. She kind of, as usual with most movies nowadays, she feels like she was shoehorned in there just to pop another name in. But you know, it's an enjoyable Bond flick. And who knows? Apparently they don't have a studio right now. No one knows if there's going to be another one. I kind of feel like they wrapped up the story with these four movies. But you know, a mediocre James Bond is still better than a lot of other movies. So I think it's definitely worth watching.
I do really like Daniel Craig as Bond. I still haven't seen Spectre. And I only just, I mean, it was probably just within the last few months that I watched Skyfall.
Right.
We talked about it. And yeah, I enjoyed it, but it was not as good as, even the first one, I think, is still one of my favorites.
No, okay. Let me make a little confession here. Still haven't seen Quantum of Solace yet.
Oh, okay.
But it's got to be pretty darn good to knock off Casino Royale.
Yeah, no, Casino Royale is fantastic. Quantum of Solace was good. Quantum of Solace was very hard to follow if you weren't really paying attention. So don't watch it late at night. Don't watch, you know, don't watch it when you're tired. Watch it when you're really ready to focus on it. And it was not, yeah. Casino Royale is one of my favorites. Like I said, I own Casino Royale, and I don't think I'm trying to remember if I have Quantum of Solace. I've only picked up Skyfall because I got it really, really cheap. Mm-hmm. So I got, you know, I do want to see it at some point, and I managed to snag a copy, and then I just watched it. So I don't know, but generally speaking, I like Craig a lot as Bond, and I need to see Spectre.
And there was another show that I've been trying to get around to watch, but my daughter basically cornered me and says, "We need to watch this right now."
Okay.
Because she said she watched episode 7 of it, and it looks interesting, so we need to find out, you know, how they got the episode 7.
How they got to their, yeah,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, so yeah, that's a weird way of how she does things. Okay, Stranger Things on Netflix. So we're about 5 or 6 episodes in, I can't remember.
All right.
I've been seeing enough on the nerd sites about how great it is. Goonies 2.0. But I got to tell you, it's more a melding of multiple 80s movies for me, because there's also a big dose of E.T. in this movie. I'm sorry, in this show. And if you've seen any of it, you probably will figure out what I'm talking about.
I haven't. I want to watch it so desperately.
And my son, you know, he is totally obsessed with Dungeons & Dragons right now. And all I got to tell him is that there's a Dungeons & Dragons element to the storyline.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and so we've all been watching it. He has quickly learned that he can't watch it without a pillow on his face, because he gets scared pretty easily, even though he's almost tall as I am. But yeah, Stranger Things, we're enjoying it, and you know, you gotta check it out.
It's, Mikey Mason,
it's really good.
Was watching it. Do you know who Mikey Mason is?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. He was watching it with his son, and his son, I want to say, is 11.
Mm-hmm.
And he got to a certain point and he was like, "Nope, I'm done. I can't watch this." He couldn't watch it at night. He finished it during the day with the lights on, but he couldn't watch it at night. He knew his limits, and he walked out of the room. And you know, Mikey Mason was like, "Oh, that's fine. You know, we're not gonna give him. You know, we're not gonna hassle him about it. He knows his limits, and that's fine." So yeah, like I said, he went back and he watched it during the day, and he was fine. But like, "No, I'm not watching this at night while it's dark. Just not gonna happen." Nothing wrong with that. So yeah, I desperately want to see it. It is a thing. I was like, the next time I have any time where I'm, because I haven't watched anything on Netflix, and it's like, because when I do, I know I'm going to start watching Stranger Things. And
yeah, no, it can be hard when you got a,
yeah, a lot of other things going on.
Yeah, or that when you got a little, you know,
yeah, yeah, daughter. You can't watch it. Yeah, I can't
like,
watch
Daddy,
it.
Daddy, what are you doing?
What are you watching? Can I watch? Is it not appropriate? She says that because I'll have something on my phone. And she'll start to look at me, and I will turn it away. She's like, "Is it not appropriate?" I said, I don't know yet. I'm still watching it. I might let you see it in a minute. I might not."
Too funny.
Yeah, is it appropriate? I haven't figured that out yet. I just started this video.
All right, and that's going to end my share time. I haven't watched a whole lot there.
Okay. The Order 66 podcast talked about it a little bit in their post show in their last episode, I think it was. And they were talking about how the two directors are people who did not grow up in that era. So it's an era that they discovered, and they made this comparison to like the kind of vibe that people started going for in the 80s when they were drawing inspiration from like the 60s and the 70s,
mm-hmm.
and how these are directors who came up in the 90s and then went back looking for inspiration, and now they're drawing it from the 80s, kind of a thing. It was an interesting discussion just all around. So if you get a chance to listen to the Last Word 66 podcast, they do some talking about it, and they did a little stuff that was spoilers, but it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't bother me. But it was an interesting discussion that you've got these, you know, late 20 somethings, you know, maybe early 30s, who are going back and looking at the references from the 80s and not doing it like they're getting the references right, is what they're kind of saying, you know, because things in the 80s didn't look like they did in the movies.
Right.
You know, because the movies were coming out of Hollywood and you know, you had all this flashy, you know, everything was very glitz and glam and you know, overly saturated colors. And that was the 80s. But that was what we saw on TV and in the movies. That wasn't the reality of the 80s.
Right. Everything the reality tends to be a little more on the nostalgic side.
Yeah, so, but anyway, either here or there, I'm really looking forward to it. Now that you're watching it, I will have to watch it so we can talk about it in depth.
All right, so that's going to be share time. So now let's get over to the news. Art, what do you have for us?
Okay, my first, you know what I'm going to go with first? I am going to go with the next James Bond needs to be a woman, according to Quantico's Priyanka Chopra.
That's about okay.
It. So you're talking about the the girl from Quantico.
The girl from Quantico.
Right.
Whatever. One of the spy type people on that show, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like we talked about, the franchise is kind of up in the air. They don't know where they're going. They don't know if Craig is going to come back. You know, who might take the role. And she's quoted as saying, I know everything is about diversity right now, but I think it should be about humanity. It's 2016. It's so easy to separate ourselves and become smaller and smaller pieces of humanity. It would be a big win for women, period. And so I just thought it was interesting, you know, we're talking about all these different kind of movements and changes. And, you know, I know I heard somebody talking about this before, about the possibility of moving James Bond into a female character, because what is James Bond? James Bond is this, you know, it's become at this point more of a code name for a spy than an actual person, because of all the actors who played him. It's you know, it makes me think of Shadowrun and, you know, getting your job from Mr. Smith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, yeah, he's a Mr. Smith. You know, it's just, oh, yeah, that's James Bond. That's a spy. That's a guy, you know. Yeah, he works for the British Secret Service, you know. Oh, yeah, it's just another spy working for the British Secret Service. It's just another Bond. I kind of like that idea. Bond isn't as, I don't know what I want to say here, hypersexualized as it used to be. As Craig is still very much a man's man, and there is still some of that air, but it's not in the same way that I think it was done in the earlier eras, in the Connery era, and the, you know, Brosnan and Daltrey and Moore and all the ones who went before. I think it was a much different. It was different, and I think the Bond character has made some changes to come into this new era. And I think this is a change it could make again with the right people behind it. It would be interesting to see where it goes. I wouldn't have a problem with it. I'm sure there are plenty of fanboys who would.
Yeah, but who cares about them?
But true.
You can't make movies for the fanboys.
You can't make movies for the fanboys, but there is an audience, a built-in audience that goes see these movies. And you can't alienate all of them because, you know, then you're not selling tickets and no one's going to see your movie, and then you're tanking.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting problem to have, because how do you update that character when part of his, I don't know, charisma was that he was a ladies' man, and I don't know if that necessarily plays as much as it did. You know, we probably have different attitudes towards sex and men and women than we did back when James Bond first started being popular.
True,
I think him objectifying women, I think, is a much bigger deal nowadays than, you know, back in the 80s, it was just, we're just, you know, being fun, you know.
Right. But I think it makes me think of the Black Widow.
Mm-hmm.
Black Widow very much is a super spy who uses her sexuality to get what she wants, to do things that she wouldn't otherwise be able to do. So, yeah, he's a ladies man, but he's often used that to get to women who were on the other side of the fence.
Right.
You know, so I don't have a problem with that. I mean, it's a real, you know, the term honeypot in the spy genre is a real thing. The Russians were incredibly adept at it. You know, go read any book that talks about, you know, the counterintelligence during the Cold War. And that was a main focus that the Russians focused on.
Yeah. But with the focus on more roles for women and more diversity in film, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, at one point, they were looking for, or somebody was talking about Halle Berry spinning off her own movie out of the James Bond movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where they go with it.
Right. Yeah.
Because Lord knows Marvel's been doing everything they can to kind of transform characters.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know. So, anyways, okay. Let me see. Do I want to talk about Star Wars or Star Trek first? I will talk about Star Wars. As if they needed more money. And the details of how many dollars are switching hands here, they're pretty nonspecific about it. But if you really wanted to watch all the Star Wars over again on a cable station that you didn't have to pay for, now you can do that on TNT and TBS. Because Turner has made the deal that they're going to be able to show all 10 movies at a certain day, at a certain point in history or a certain point in the future, because they're going to get the rights for Episode 7 and Rogue One.
Okay.
So we're basically talking about Episodes 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, and then 7. Trying to see what it says here, because the headline says... maybe I didn't say. Okay, TNT and TBS will be home to the network premieres of 2015's The Force Awakens, as well as the upcoming spinoff Rogue One. So I guess that would be 8 movies?
That would be 8 movies. Because when you said 10, I'm like, okay, where are we going? Are we going with the Ewok movies? Are we going with the Christmas special?
No.
Hit me with the Christmas special, damn it.
the pack with Disney covers 2015 Star Wars The Force Awakens, as well as this year's spinoff Rogue One and the next 3 Star Wars theatrical releases.
Okay.
So the next 3, they could be mentioning Rogue One twice, and 8 and 9, or the hinted at Han Solo movie.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, so...
Wait. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that... and it's going to be starting on Tuesday, September 20th. They're going to be showing Phantom Menace first. Okay. Probably, you know, the less popular order in watching the 6 movies.
Yeah.
Phantom Menace, and then Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith, and then on Friday the 23rd, 2 showings of A New Hope... And then Saturday, they're getting wackadoodle because they're going to start with Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clone, Revenge of the Sith. Then they're going to jump to Empire Strikes Back twice. And then Sunday, they're going to go back to Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith. And then at 2:25 p.m., they're going to do A New Hope, Empire, Return of the Jedi back-to-back, so 8 and 11. And at 2 a.m., you can watch Phantom Menace again.
Wow. So people will be setting their DVRs to.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If they don't have it in every other format.
Right.
So yay, Star Wars. Okay. Art, what do you got?
Well, you just made me think about. Did you see that that cut together, beautifully edited, fan made Kenobi trailer?
I did not.
Oh, dude, write that down. Go find that. It is amazing. It is. It takes footage from the Star Wars movies and it combines it with the Ewan McGregor. He did a Jesus movie about when Jesus went into the wilderness. And I forget. I'm totally blanking on the name. As soon as I saw it, I remembered the movie. And now I got nothing. Just go look for it. There is a fan-made Kenobi trailer, and it's amazing. It fits perfectly. So that's what you made me think about when you're talking about Star Wars movies.
Okay.
something, when we talked about Bond, and then you started talking about changing gender roles and how Marvel's doing, did you see the Ryan Potter video auditioning to be Robin in the Ben Affleck standalone Batman movie?
No, I did not.
Oh my goodness. I shared all of these things. I thought I tagged you, but maybe I didn't. Maybe I just saved them.
You tagged me on something about a documentary about board games.
Oh, that one too. That's another good one. Must Love Games, or Must Love Board Games. It's like Must Love Dogs, but it's with a girl who wants board games. Just a second. Aubrey, yes? It's Talk to Mama. Okay. So, do you know who Ryan Potter is?
No.
Okay. Ryan Potter was the voice of Hero in Big Hero 6.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And he is apparently into martial arts. And so he cut this video of him doing, you know, just a bunch of stuff and a little fight choreography. He is this, you know, young, half Asian actor, voice actor who I guess wants to get, you know, into acting. But he looks a lot like Tim Drake. And so he put out this video and they talked about, you know, he's quoted as saying, this was really just to start that dialogue. And it's clearly done so. In the YouTube comments, I see time and again, I don't want to see an Asian Tim Drake. And other people go, hey, he's also half Caucasian. On the other end of the spectrum, I see people, oh my God, he looks just like him. We need him as Tim Drake. And he's like, that's exactly what I wanted to happen. So it's a really interesting video, him just kind of reaching out and saying, hey, you know, I'd like to be considered for this part. And it's really cool. And I hope something comes of it.
Yeah, you know, it's... I got to admit, I'm getting a little saturated with trailers.
Okay.
Trailers and fan videos. But I'll have to look at that. I was completely unaware that was the voice actor who did Hero.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was, I was like, oh, okay. So he's not just a nobody. He's somebody out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Pretty soon there's a crap load of shows that are coming back and new ones too. So I was just going to quickly scan through some shows that might have your interest. I'm speaking to Art or our listeners. And of course it got my attention because, Luke Cage was at the top of this article. But shows that have started already, American Horror Story started September 10th, Blind Spot has already started, and I guess Z Nation, which is a zombie comedy that's on Sci-Fi, will start September 16th at 8. Gotham is on September 19th. Lucifer's coming back. Now, I'm talking about science fiction and fantasy shows, and there's going to be one that has Kristen Bell and Ted Danson on NBC that starts September 19th at 10. This is called The Good Place, and this is a comedy with the premise that a mistake in the afterlife put Eleanor Shellstrop, Kristen Bell, in the good place instead of the bad place.
Oh, interesting.
That's all we really know. The trailer's pretty funny, and Bell, Ted Danson, and some guy named William Jackson Harper are clearly having a blast. Not really interested in Scream Queens. But Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. comes back September 20th, and in case you haven't seen anything in the past 3 months, Ghost Rider will be in this season. So we also have a new S.H.I.E.L.D. director and a new AI in the form of Ada, Mallory Jansen. Any interest in The Exorcist or Van Helsing?
Van Helsing I enjoyed.
Okay.
I've in The Exorcist since I was 10.
Okay, so Van Helsing is starting on September 23rd, 10 p.m. on Sci-Fi. It is a post-apocalyptic world, aren't they all? And Vanessa Helsing, Kelly Overton, is just living in it. Look, the name thing, turning what was half of a last name into a first name, tells you everything you need to know about this camp fest. Then we're going to have Once Upon a Time, September 25th. Here's their little blurb. Look, let's be honest here. Once Upon a Time has gone very far off the rails, and we are very tired and not recommending anyone suddenly start watching it. Because it looks like, what was the name of the bad guy in Aladdin? Jafar?
Was it yes.
Jafar? Okay, hey, it looks like they have someone playing Jafar. Son of Zorn, September 25th. A classic fish out of water sitcom about a He-Man-esque animated character ends up in the OC to spend time with his real life son and ex-wife. I think this is season 2.
I saw it. That sounds familiar.
And it's Phil Lord and Chris Miller, the guys who did Lego Movie.
I saw the previews for that.
You've probably heard about Last Man on Earth. That comes back September 25th. Okay, on Sci-Fi, we have a show called Channel Zero. It's an anthology show split into 2 6-episode miniseasons. The first one, Candle Cove, is based on the creepypasta of the same name. The second, The No End House, is about a woman who finds everything at home has changed after she visits a disturbing haunting house. And the one I'm looking forward to, Luke Cage, starts September 30th, which we're about 2.5 weeks away from.
Yeah, that is right around the corner.
Timeless.
That is.
Starts on NBC October 3rd. One of a billion time travel shows this year. Timeless is about a scientist, a soldier, and a history professor working together to fix the damage done after a criminal steals a time machine. Flash comes back October 4th. No Tomorrow is about a woman who is told by a man that the world will end in 8 months and 12 days. She and her friends try to figure out if this is real or fake while also completing her bucket list. Arrow comes back October 5th. Frequency October 5th. Supergirl, October 10th. Legends of Tomorrow, Supernatural. Falling Water on USA. Rocky Horror Picture Show Live, October 20th. There's a show on Netflix, Black Mirror, a sci-fi thriller anthology that takes our usually hidden fears of technology and puts them all on grand display. And we'll get 6 episodes in October. Walking Dead comes back October 23rd, so we can all relax about who is going to get killed by Negan.
I don't even understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I know. Someone out there understands what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no. Everybody's watching Walking Dead. I'm alone.
And then on BBC America, we have Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency.
Nice.
And this is October 22nd. Max Landis's take on the Douglas Adams character is not quite book canon compliant. In fact, the whole show looks like madcap fun, but also might be more entertaining if it had a different name, one with no expectations attached to it.
Yeah.
All right. So there's my look at TV this fall season for the fantasy and sci-fi inclined.
Nice. Very nice.
All right, Art. What do you got next?
Okay. This is a follow-up story. Why Cinemark Theaters is no longer going after the Dark Knight Rises victims for legal fees. Sitting here at some point in the past, we talked about the shooting during the Dark Knight Rises in the Cinemark Theater and how the theater victims were trying to sue the theater over insufficient security, and then the theater started countersuing the people who were suing them, and it was a mess. Well, the original suit, you know, got denied, and Cinemark, instead of continuing to go after these people, you know, settled and said, hey, as long as you no longer pursue suing us, we're not going to go after you for our legal fees. Let's just call this done and put this behind us. And they agreed. And so now it's all said and done. And so it's come to an end. And I think that it's the best for all parties involved.
Mm-hmm.
That they just kind of go their own separate ways and walk away from it. A real tragedy any way you go.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I talked about Star Wars. Here's a little blurb about Star Trek. We're going to have to wait a little longer. It looks like they're going to push it back till May of 2017. According to the wrap, they weren't going to be ready, you know, because January is when episodes were supposed to be coming out. So... and one other little blurbette is fans of Chloe Grace Moretz. She's quitting acting for the short term.
Huh.
She says she's, you know, she's in so many projects, that she doesn't have, she says she wants to reassess who I am and find myself within my roles again. I'm realizing that I can slow down. And so she's going to be focusing on producing and is currently working on 2 TV shows that she will soon begin shopping around. So apparently she does not believe in the whole blessed with work idea. But, you know, good for her.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Okay.
As long as you got all your bills paid and you're not living beyond your means.
Well, I don't think.
You need the work. You don't need the work.
Yeah. I don't think she has to worry about that. But
yeah.
That was my last news story. So, Art, take us out.
Okay. I got one more here. I thought this was interesting. Why the Beatles record executives were unhappy with Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So I thought this was interesting. It caught my eye. And also the Ferris Bueller is coming up on its 30th anniversary. That just blows my mind. 30 years. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. So anyway, we paid EMI a huge sum of money at the time. I think it was $100,000. But the EMI execs weren't happy because the song was messed with. Brass was added in the editing room because there was a brass band in the film. When you saw the band playing and you're hearing Twist and Shout, it would have been weird if you didn't hear any brass. So they added it in. I don't know if it was the Beatles who weren't happy or EMI wasn't happy, but somebody wasn't happy because you're not supposed to mess with the music. And I just thought that was hilarious. And they said, with the exception of Across the Universe, there hasn't really been a lot of licensed to movies Beatles music. Mm-hmm. And they're saying this is kind of the stone that sent ripples across the pond as to them being like, nah, never mind. Nah, never mind. So with all that money they could have made, they're like, nah, we don't need it. So I just thought that was funny. It caught my eye. And Ferris Bueller is an absolute classic. And now I'm going to have to go watch that again. And that is all I have, sir.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of anniversaries, we didn't even talk about the 50-year anniversary of Star Trek.
Yeah, that went by.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy, too. I read a story about Lucille Ball's involvement in that, and I was unaware of any of that.
Yeah, I vaguely remember hearing something about that.
Yeah, just the whole kind of the producer. It originally came out of Desilu Productions, and the board members originally said, "Nah, we're not interested." And with her being the head of Desilu at the time, she said, "Nah, I'm gonna veto you guys, and we're gonna do it." So that's just crazy that it was, you know, a vote away from, "Nah, we don't need that."
I mean, there's been so many stories in Hollywood where that's, you know, things that almost didn't happen.
Almost didn't happen, yeah. I mean, I didn't say that Roddenberry couldn't have taken it somewhere else.
True.
But would it have been different? Would it have been, you know, who knows? But I just think that's funny. So yeah, that's all I got.
All right. So that's going to bring this episode of Backseat Box Office to a close. So everyone, thank you for listening. If you would like to send us a voicemail or tweet at us or any other kind of feedback you'd like to give us, just go to backseatproducers.com and I'm sure you will find all the appropriate links and all that other stuff. Other than that, Art, you excited about Magnificent Seven?
No, I don't. I'm...
Oh, man.
Sorry.
Looks good. Western in the theater. Anyways.
Yeah, I know. I do. I don't know. Who's behind that?
That's an Antoine Fuqua directed film with Denzel Washington. I haven't seen it. The trailer looks good. It's probably not going to be as good as the trailer looks, but, you know, I like me some Westerns. So anyways, with that, take it easy, everyone, and we will catch you next time. Art, say goodbye.
Goodbye.